So I'm gonna just start us off by welcoming everyone, and you know, we'll just invite other women as we always do to just join when we hear those little beeps, as we do. But let's just take a moment to take 3 or 4 or 100 deep breaths, however many feels right to you. And if you have the privilege in this moment of not needing to do anything else but be present, just really allow yourself to drop into that. And if you don't have that luxury and that privilege, seeing if you can just allow yourself to be present to body and to listening and to being safe, especially if you're in a car. And to just imagine that web that we have created from California to Florida to Minnesota to Colorado to Boston to New York to Arizona, and please forgive me if I've forgotten your state, but you can just all imagine the way that we're webbed together across this whole United States. I think someone said one of us is in Hawaii today, which is lucky you. May we all be there with you in spirit. And some of you came specifically to this conversation to hear Nina speak, and some of you have been part of the whole series. Whatever is true, just take a moment and create your intention for this conversation. Your intention for yourself, your intention for the world, your world. And then in a moment, just popcorn style, we're just going to allow each woman's voice to be heard should she want to be heard. And if someone said your intention, you can be quiet or you can say it again. And we'll just take 1 minute and you can sort of throw your intention into the fire in the center of the circle. Just one word to capture your intention for today, for this hour of time being with Nina. And who would ever like to begin?
Inspiration.
Thank Awakening. You. Thank you.
Delight. Power.
Expansion.
Potential.
Enough.
For.
What was that last one?
Enough.
Thank you.
Possibilities.
Possibilities, yeah. And then, anyone else want to throw one into the fire?
Embracing.
Beautiful, thank you.
Love.
So welcome to session 5 of Gather the Women sponsored Women's Leadership Teleseries with very special guest today, Ms. Nina Simons. And I thought, Marilyn, since you are friends and colleagues and more well known to Nina and she to you, that maybe you wanted to say one or two beautiful sentences to introduce your friend, and then we'll pass the stone to her.
Oh, wonderful, Nina. Well, first of all, I'm delighted. I feel the work you're doing with women is so in alignment and so absolutely resonating at the same frequency, shall we say. If any of you haven't heard her, Nina is also, you can Google her, and Michael Stone did a fabulous interview with Nina that I just love. And I also want to say a word and say that Nina also does an incredible seminar, a week long, I think it is, on women's leadership. So she is really making her mark in her own own right within and without of the bioneers. And what, I can't remember the letters. Tell me the name of it again, Nina.
It's Cultivating Women's Leadership.
It is. I love the term, Cultivating Women's Leadership. So lots of things to Google about Nina, and I cannot tell you that I'm just delighted. I woke up bright-eyed and bushy-tailed knowing that we're going to be sharing this time with you this morning. So thank you so much for lending your time and your gifts to us.
Well, thank you, Marilyn. My pleasure. And honor, really.
Thank you.
Jen, shall I take it from here, or did you have other plans?
I think so. No, take it away, Steve.
Go.
Let's see where you bring us. And I have loads of questions if somehow there's a lapse, but it's never happened before with these women, so I think you'll have plenty.
Well, my thought was then just to share with all of you to speak for maybe 15 or 20 minutes, and then I really would love to know what you're thinking about and what questions arise for you, either while I'm talking or questions that you may have brought to the call, because I'd much rather have a dialogue for the remainder of it. And so does that sound okay with everybody?
Great.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay.
Sure.
Well, and really thank you to Jen and Marilyn. What came up for me when I was going into my intention was that I really want to be the best instrument to serve the purpose that wants to come through me, which is all about all of the things that you said. It's about inspiring and awakening and knowing that what we are is not only enough, but that we have all that we need within us. And it's also about living into this wild, turbulent, transitional time where so much is dying and so much is being born at the same time. And how do we stay present to the combination of all that's happening and stay centered in ourselves at the same time and find some way to hold our own balance and our own connection to our inner purpose. So that's a lot of what my work and my practice is about these days. Let's see. I thought I would share with you just a little bit about my own journey and how I came into perhaps both the Bioneers work, but then how I moved further into a primary focus on using my own learning to create tools and communications and experiences to best support women in all of us stepping into our greatest authority and our greatest passion and purpose on behalf of this incredible earth, our home, and each other and ourselves all at the same time. My journey into Bioneers was a kind of an unlikely one in that I went to visit a garden with my then boyfriend, who was later to become my husband. And it was 1989, and he had been invited to film in a garden in southern New Mexico that was a biodiversity garden being done by this master gardener. And I traveled with him for the weekend, and really I thought I was going for a weekend in the country. My background was that I grew up in New York City, and I was the daughter of two artists. And I grew up really believing that my calling was to work in the arts in order to change the world. And as I went through high school and college, the thing that most captured my enthusiasm and my joy was theater. And I really came to believe that theater, it was a time in the early 70s when there was a lot of kind of avant-garde theater going on. It was Sam Shepard and Harold Pinter, and it was what I came to call transformational theater, because it was theater that really challenged people's belief systems. And my sense was that if I could help create by directing, stage managing, and producing theater that would really challenge people's comfort zones, then that was the best way I knew to help change the world, because I saw that the biggest terrain that we really needed to help transform was the landscape between people's ears and also in their hearts. And I really felt like there was something really magical and purposeful about the live experience of seeing people change in theater and having an empathic connection with that that had a real capacity to change people. So that's what I was all excited about doing, and I went off after college and I worked in live theater, and I rapidly became disillusioned because I realized, A, how hard it was to make a living at theater like that, much less at any theater, and also how little of that kind of theater was actually happening. And I didn't quite have the inner security to go do it on my own, and so I got kind of disillusioned and pissed off and went off and did spiritual work for a while and managed restaurants and eventually came to Santa Fe, New Mexico, where I was working for the Chamber Music Festival here and building community and doing some innovative marketing with them. And I met this fellow, Kenny Ossibel, who took me off to this garden in southern New Mexico. So there we are, going off to Gila, New Mexico, this tiny town, and we get out of the car, and first thing after we drop off our bags, this master gardener takes us for a tour through this garden. And it was the most exquisite garden I had ever seen. There were literally hundreds and hundreds of different varieties of food and herb and flower plants growing in very, very close proximity to each other. And it was more variety and more diversity than I had ever seen. And having grown up in New York, I had learned over the course of time that I had a really deep kind of spiritual and soul connection to nature, but I had never gotten into gardening at all. I didn't know anything about gardening. And so I walked through this garden, and the garden was filled with amazing, amazing plants. There were sunflowers that were like 6 feet high with huge heads that felt like they watched us as we walked through the garden. And there were whole societies of tomatoes, like every color and shape and size. And it was, they were all baking in the New Mexico sun, and so they had this amazing scent. And then Gabriel, who is the master gardener, invited us to taste things as we walked. So we were sampling tomatoes and herbs I'd never heard of, like lemon licorice mint and chocolate basil. And there were incredible grain plants, which have since become much more widely known, like quinoa, which has these gorgeous beige braids, golden braids, sort of shining in the sun, and amaranth, which was the high-protein grain of the Aztecs. And there was something called elephant head amaranth that had these amazing scarlet shapes that looked like an elephant's trunk rising up into the sun. And so we walked through this garden, and Gabriel, as we walked, would introduce us to each plant. And he would introduce us to the plants using their common name and their Latin name. And then he would explain how they were related to the plants around them. And by the time we got to the garden, to the end of the garden, all of my senses were dancing. I just felt like I had never, ever felt so alive and so in love and so transported and so moved by this exquisite dance between a person and nature. And I remember thinking, perhaps this is what Eden was like. And then we got to the end of the garden, and I felt like the spirit of the natural world tapped me on the shoulder and said, "You're working for me now." And it was like I heard that inside my head. And I was utterly floored. I mean, I felt my jaw dropped. I went, "Oh, no, I can't do that. I'm the girl who hated science. I don't know how to do this. I don't have a clue how to serve this." But the call was really unmistakable, and it wouldn't go away. And so I wound up going back to Santa Fe and quitting my job with the Chamber Music Festival and going to work with my partner, Kenny, to help found a company called Seeds of Change, which was a biodiversity seed company that sold seeds to market to gardeners all over the country in an effort to help conserve biodiversity in the food system. And I found that my communication skills could be turned towards this purpose in a way that instead of feeling like being able to sell ice to Eskimos, as one of my mentors had once told me, was like a yucky thing, suddenly it had meaning and beauty and purpose. And so together we grew Seeds of Change for about 5 years until it became kind of a large national brand. And in the course of that, Kenny came to me with this idea to start an annual conference. He said, you know, I've discovered all these people who have amazing solutions for how to live on Earth in ways that honor each other and the web of life and future generations, and will you help me produce this? And neither of us had really ever been to a conference, much less produced one. And at first I said, you know, it sounds a little sciencey to me. I'm not sure that it's really up my alley. But then I decided I could feel that it was important, so I helped him produce the first one. And I sat there again in awe with this wonderful, diverse array of human beings telling stories that ranged from Native American wisdom to how to detoxify water and soil and air using natural systems to how to make peace with each other. And I decided this was the community of people that I really wanted to serve. So so together we grew Bioneers, and that's actually been 20 years. And about 5 years later, Seeds of Change, we were doing Bioneers and Seeds of Change side by side, and Bioneers was in our spare time. It was kind of my heart work on top of, I was working like a crazy woman. And 5 years into it, Seeds of Change got taken over. And it was a very painful experience, sort of like having your child abducted or something. But what happened as a result of it was that really what we came away with was Bioneers. And in the morning that followed, I did a lot of soul searching. And in the course of that time, I was lent a video by a friend who had a video store, and I was in there one day looking for a video to take home, and she said, oh, take this, and I won't charge you for it because I think it's so important that everyone see it that I don't charge anyone money for it. And she put in my hands a copy of a film called The Burning Times, and The Burning Times was a film made by a Canadian filmmaker. It was the middle of a trilogy of 3-hour-long films, and I think the whole trilogy is called Return to the Goddess, but The Burning Times is specifically tells the story about a period in European history, which many or most of us descended from on this call, I imagine, and it's a very underreported period of European history. It ranged from the 1200s to the 1700s, almost 500 years. And around my house, we started calling it the Hidden Holocaust of Women. Mm-hmm. And what happened during that time period and what the film tells the story of is that in almost every country in Europe, and to a smaller degree in this country with the Salem witch trials in the 1600s, women were persecuted and tortured and tried and imprisoned and often burned at the stake and killed for the crime of being witches. And it was a shocking thing to learn about. I remember seeing it and thinking, oh my God, I don't even know if I believe in reincarnation. But what I do know is that somewhere in the marrow of my bones, I know that I feel that I was there, and that I know the fear that resulted from that time. Mm-hmm. And for the first time ever in my life, things started to make sense. Like, why it scared me to talk publicly about how deeply and passionately I care about life and love and this earth. And I realized, oh my God, well, anyone who had any awareness during that time, there were literally 6 to 8 generations of children who saw their mothers taken off and tortured and burned. So I believe that it's a deep cellular memory from our European lineage, and that it's a crazy crime that it's not being taught in every elementary school in this country. But But when I saw it, one of the other things that happened for me was that I suddenly, it gave me this frame and this worldview through which suddenly all of the people and amazing solutions and crazy challenges that I knew about from Bioneers, I suddenly began to see through a gender lens. And for the first time, I understood that all of the worst harms and pains and damage and violence that is perpetuated all over this planet, I see as a result of an imbalance between the masculine and the feminine within us. And what I began to understand was that I could see that there's an idea that Wendell Berry calls solving for pattern. And he says that there are three different kinds of solutions that you can find to any given problem. And one of them is a solution that makes the problem worse. And another one is a solution that solves for that particular problem but may create other problems that you hadn't anticipated. And the kind of solution that you really want to look for is what he calls solving for pattern. And he says when you find a solution that solves for pattern, what it does is it not only addresses the initial problem that you're looking at, but it has cascading benefits to the whole system. And suddenly you see that one intervention can create health and harmony within a whole system. And when I saw the Burning Times, that's what happened for me, was that I began to understand that a combination of women rising into leadership and restoring the feminine throughout all of us, regardless of our temporary gender assignment, and through all of our institutions and all of our governments and all of our social systems, could actually solve for all of the environmental and social and spiritual problems that I saw happening all over the world. And that kind of blew my mind. And then I started remembering how when I was in my 20s, I had had a time where I looked for women mentors. And I had a really hard time. It was a really painful period for me because every time I found a woman that I really thought I wanted to learn from, she would shoo me away. And I didn't exactly know why, except it seemed like she was threatening to me, or she found me threatening. Or for one reason or another, I couldn't find older women who could help me learn how to grow into myself. And I remembered that as a really painful time. And then when I was 40, I actually became pregnant with my husband, who I adore, for the third time. And I knew that it was probably the last chance that I would have to consider having a child in this world. And needless to say, I prayed and meditated and considered as deeply as I knew how because I couldn't postpone the decision any longer. And I looked at every mother and child I saw on the street and I dreamt on it and I prayed and I went, you know, as I said, I asked as deeply as I knew how. And really what I got was that I couldn't get a resounding yes. And I couldn't have a child without having a really clear resounding yes. And so I had a third abortion, and then I embarked on a quest to get as clear as humanly possible about what my assignment was, because I decided that if I wasn't going to have a child in this life, I was going to have myself. And so over the last 12 years, I'm 52 now, I've really been on this quest to feel into and to understand what the specific assignment is that my soul feels like it was born to do. And it's all about restoring the feminine and encouraging and strengthening women to step into leadership and using my own learning from myself to help translate it into tools and experiences for other women. And just two more things I want to say about that, and then I would love to hear what you all would love to hear about. I mean, my sources really are threefold. My sources are myself for my learning, my deepest self, because I do believe in the deepest part of my marrow that we each have within us all that we need. And my second source is that I have been blessed by having a very unusual kind of graduate school in my life, which is that for 20 years I've had the opportunity to study with hundreds and hundreds of amazing mentors through Bioneers. And I've learned that mentors show up in your life whether they consciously agree to it or not. We all have access to hundreds of mentors. So that's been an amazing source of learning for me. And through them, I've learned to listen to the teachings of the natural world to be a great source of learning. Actually, that's four. And then the fourth really is Native American people and indigenous people all over the world, from whom I believe, I think that part of our challenge in this time is for all of us to reclaim and rediscover our indigenous roots and to re-indigenize ourselves in all the ways that that may mean. And I think that that means relearning how to prioritize community and relationship and connection to place and ritual and a lot of things. So, and leading from the heart and leading from purpose, and letting our mind be the servant to our purpose rather than the leader. So I'm working on a book. I'm working on two books. I'm having the incredible privilege to teach these workshops, which I just love. And one of the core premises of the workshops is that there are several ways that as women we have the opportunity to show up for each other and be each other's greatest sources of growth and inspiration and strengthening and learning. And so the workshops are about learning how to do that and giving women an experience of that. And also that I think one of our greatest gifts at this time is the incredible diversity of women who are stepping into leadership. And one of the lessons that I've learned from the natural world is that diversity is not about political correctness. It's about resilience. It's about love. It's about survival. And I think that our capacity to reach across differences, to be able to be effective allies and collaborators and cooperators and to share power and authority with each other is one of the greatest callings that we as women have at this time. And I think, again, because of our biological uniqueness and because of our cultural conditioning, we have a huge opportunity to step into exactly what the world needs right now. And it's the most hopeful thing I know, and it's the most exciting. So that's kind of a quick introduction. I hope that's interesting or useful, and I'd love to know what sparks you in it or what you'd like to hear more about. Was everybody there?
We're all here. Just sort of taking
totally here.
The richness of your sharing.
Ooh.
I know we all have lots of questions.
I have a question that I'd love to throw in if this is Vicki.
Say your
and
name.
Yes, this is Vicki. I'm in Pittsburgh, and I would love to hear you say more about your ideas about how we should be all claiming our indigenous identities.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to try to give fairly brief answers so that we can have as many questions as possible, but if we have time, we can go deeper. And also, I would just offer you that there are some social networking sites that I'm involved in, and if you want to get onto them after the call, we can continue dialogues through the web and the Internet.
I just want to say that I resonate with every single thing you put out there. Every single thing.
Oh my gosh.
I'm so glad you're putting it all out there. But this is a new a way you put this. It's a little different for me to hear it, that we, you know, that we all need to claim our indigenous roots. So I really am interested to see how you're tying this into your other ideas.
Okay.
Nina, why don't you quickly give us the website, too, so that we can follow up on that.
Sure. You know, on Facebook, there is a collective site called Cultivating Women's Leadership. Perhaps even the better one is if you go to the Bioneers.org site and then go to the community or social networking site that's connected to that, and type in Cultivating Women's Leadership, that's the very best place.
Okay, good. Thank you. So now,
sure, and that has lots more information about the gatherings and everything else. Okay, so let's see. Claiming our indigenous roots. Well, there are a lot of different ways I could speak to this. One of the first ways that I understood was that, you know, I'm going to assume that I'm correct in imagining that most of us on this call have European roots in one way or another. Would that be right?
Yep.
It is for me.
Yep. Okie doke. So that means that we're all transplants, you know, and that something was lost when our ancestors came to this country. And one of the things that I've been learning, just last week, I actually took a training that was a training called for white anti-racist facilitators. And I think that one of the realities about this current moment that we're living in is that, you know, as I'm sure most of you know, in the next 10 years or so, the United States is going to become a majority minority country. So, and the world, the complexion of the world is changing. So in the U.S., I'm going to speak to U.S. culture, we actually all are products of many generations of racist culture. And no matter how liberal and how healed of it we may think we are, the messages from it live within us in much the same way that that the messages from the burning times live within us. I think that our capacity to step into leadership is a direct reflection of the stories we carry within ourselves. And I think that we have stories both from the burning times and from a legacy of racist beliefs in this country. And what I've come to understand is that my friends who are people of color in this country, no matter whether they're African American or Asian or Native American, they all have racist stories embedded within their inner lives as well. So we all have those stories. It's not a blame thing. It's not a guilt thing. We're all products of many cultures. And so for me, one of the things I really came to understand from that training was, as white people, our tendency is to turn to our friends who are people of color and say, teach me about your culture. Teach me about multiculturalism. Teach me about diversity. And actually, that's not their job. So part of what we've lost in the migration to this country is we've lost our indigenous roots. Most of us come from places where many generations of our ancestors may have lived and had a deep connection to a place and a way of growing food and a way of living in community and a relationship to the land. And so what I keep learning from both from my teachers in nature and my teachers who are indigenous people is that indigenous roots means to me cultivating a connection to place and to understanding that we are part not only of a human community, but of a human community that is embedded within a natural community. And so our community is much bigger than the people. And so one of the ways that I think we can reclaim our indigenous roots is by noticing what we feel called to connect with. You know, some of us may love flowers, some of us may love birds, some of us may find a brook or a stream or a body of water that we really resonate with. You know, everyone has different elements of the natural world. For some of us it's animals, for some of us it's the night sky, you know, but we each, I think, if we give ourselves time and permission, we'll find our own resonances. Sometimes, you know, it's totem animals. I mean, there are all kinds of ways. I think there are as many ways as we are individuals. But I think one of the ways is to really give yourself permission and time to fall in love with the whatever it is in nature that calls you, and to consider becoming a guardian or an ally with that thing or that system or that element, and getting to know your place and investing your awareness in your place is one of the most sacred things we can do. And I think it's a source of sustenance for our bodies and our souls that's huge. And another way that I know to reclaim indigenous roots is to literally learn about your ancestors. You know, just in the same way that, remember that old series on PBS that was Roots, that was all about this African-American tracing his roots back through the slavery and back to Africa? So I've begun a journey because I was, I'm of Jewish lineage, and I was raised by parents who were assimilating Jews, and I was raised without any religious or spiritual practice. And so I've begun to learn about Judaism. You know, I mean, you can do it in a lot of ways. You can do it by learning about your ancestors and literally your family tree. Because one of the interesting things, and here's where the burning times and reclaiming our indigeneity come together, is that one of the things that happened at the burning times was that it was the rise of Catholicism throughout Europe. And in that rise of Catholicism, there were a lot of practices that were essentially pagan in nature that were overturned and became buried. And most of those ways of relating to the earth and each other were feminine-based. You know, so there was a really deep understanding throughout most of the cultures that most of us came from that the earth was essentially feminine in nature, and that if the earth was the, was our home and the source of our sustenance, then she was sacred. And we are a part of her, therefore we're sacred. And the connection between us and her is deeply, deeply sacred. And that's what indigenous rituals and ceremonies and, you know, pagan rites that honor the springtime and the harvest and, you know, the bottom line is our lives are deeply, inextricably entwined and embedded within the context of this magnificent creation. So, I mean, that's some of what I understand currently about reclaiming indigenous roots. I'm sure there's lots more to it. I mean, I think as women we have a natural affinity for healing. And before the burning times, the first women who were persecuted were the midwives and the healers, because all healing was in the province of women. The women were the herbalists, and of course the women were the ones who helped bring life into the world, and the women were the ones who helped move life out of the world. And I think that's part of what may have been so threatening. And during the course of the burning times, medicine became the purview of men, and the women who were persecuted fastest were the healers. So I actually think that as women in this time, part of the call that I feel and I hear is to be healers. And some of us are literal healers, and some of us are spiritual healers, and some of us are cultural healers. But I think we're all called to be healers in all the many areas of life, and that that's another piece of our indigenous roots. And if we go back far enough, the words of our ancestors begin to make sense. And I think we're all recovering from an inherited culture. One of the curious things that I learned in this anti-racism training was that things that I had always attributed to the patriarchy, things that were wrong with our culture, you know, like consumerism and an addiction to growth and being totally hierarchical and things that I had only attributed to the hierarchy, I mean to the patriarchy, I began to understand are also classic tenets of white culture. And interestingly enough, You know, if any of us had the opportunity to be a fly on the wall with a gathering of women who were not white, we would experience a whole different kind of culture than we're accustomed to. And so I think part of what we're learning to shed is this inherited culture, which has a combination of patriarchy and whiteness and white supremacy in it. Honestly, I know it's a heavy word, but I do mean it. And we have an extraordinary opportunity to shed that culture and to midwife in a replacement culture that is informed by our indigenous roots and midwifed in with allies who are women of color. And I think that's the most sacred call I can imagine. And I'm so honored and grateful to actually have you all on the journey. I don't assume you have the same call, by the way. I don't mean to be hubris that way, but that's how I hear it anyway. And it's really exciting and scary.
This is Judith. I can totally relate to the things that you're speaking of. I remember the first time I did a Gather the Women event, I was terrorized, and I realized at that time I was consciously aware that it went back to what you're speaking of, the burning times. I was very aware of that, and have been most of my life very aware, and concerned, particularly with having a family. I wasn't so concerned about what would happen to me, but
yep.
The impact that would have on my family. So,
yeah.
These things that you speak of just totally, I mean, trees are it for me. The Celtic world, there I go. So I know that those are my roots, and just to hear you speak it is, that's fabulous. And one of the things that you described about women, it's in our circles that we can find our ways to support each other and mentor one another.
Yep. Exactly. Well, thank you, Judith. I mean, the other thing that what you're mentioning raises for me is that I have learned to have a practice of reorienting my relationship to fear. One of my teachers, a woman who's spoken at Bioneers, is this wild woman from the Texas Gulf Coast named Diane Wilson. And she's a fifth-generation fisherwoman. With a high school education. And when she learned that her county was the most toxic in the whole nation, she went ballistic. And she educated herself and taught herself how to file legal briefs and founded a nonprofit and went up against multinational chemical corporations to get them to sign zero discharge agreements. And when she was speaking at Bioneers once, she said, the way that I know that I'm on track is that I smell my fear and I head straight for it. And I remember hearing that and thinking, God, that's bullshit. That's the most macho crap I've ever heard. And then I went home and I couldn't shake it. You know how sometimes you hear something and it just lands
yeah.
in you?
Yeah.
And I kept thinking about it and thinking about it, and then I realized that the things that are the most important to me to say are the scariest for me to write and speak about. You know, and so I've started using fear. When I smell my fear, I ask myself, you know, is this real and something I need to pay attention to, or is it an inner compass telling me that this is what I need to work toward? And that if I head towards it, it will unleash a whole new realm of possibility for me.
Wow. There's that, Nina, that, again, there's that beautiful Audre Lorde quote about when I begin to use my strength in the service of my vision, it becomes less and less important whether or not I am afraid.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful statement that
yeah.
she makes about fear.
Yeah.
Nina, this is Marilyn. I have been pondering an article that I think I even sent to you called The End of Macho, which really speaks to what men are going through right now. I think there's a whole identity crisis for them.
in terms of work and jobs and economy, et cetera, and their attachments. And at the same time, other articles that are saying, in fact, within that article, the rising power of women as we move into you know, positions of authority. And the concern that came up for me then was first of all, that women, that we not just watch it and say, isn't it great, women are now in charge, but more importantly, that we begin to speak to women about how they're going to be in charge. In other words, are they going to go out and do it in the same model as we've always done it in? As you said, it's inculcated in us as white women to take that, you know, to, in other words, do it the way the patriarch did it. And then the other side of it is that the men, I think, it's like, while the women need to have some understanding of their new thrust and power, men need to have some direction on the inner realm of how to process the changes. And so I have huge compassion for what the men are going through right now. And I'm just wondering if you could speak to that.
Marilyn, that's such a great question. And actually, I'm so, so happy that you raised that article, because let me tell everyone on the call, it's an amazing article. You'll need to Google it to find it, and it's called The Death of Macho. And
I actually have
dazzling.
It. Nina, this is Jen, and we can send it out to the whole group after the call, the link
it's
to
incredible.
It.
It's incredible. So, Marilyn, thank
me,
you so much for sending it and naming it.
I think Jennifer, you sent it to me, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, I sent it to you. A woman actually who was registered for this call. I don't know if you're on here, Heather, but she got in the email, Nina, and she said, I think you all might find this article interesting, and I'm not sure whether she actually was able to make the call or not, but she sent it to me. So thank you, Heather.
I literally read it yesterday, and I was blown away.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Definitely read it. It's really incredible, and it's actually written by a woman of color, of course, also.
Actually, it's so Marilyn. It's the one, when I Googled it, it was written by a Muslim male.
Muslim male?
A Muslim
Seriously?
Male.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow.
He's in a think tank
to
call the New Republic or something.
Wow.
Oh, I've got to find out who he is.
Yeah,
it's
we've
got to
Google him.
Rehan Salam is the guy's name.
Yes. I Googled him, and his picture was up there, and he's with that think tank that they talked about at the end of the article.
Even
How
more power
great.
To it.
Well,
yeah.
Thank you.
Good.
Okay,
good.
So let me just see if I can scooch in a few words on this.
Yes.
Marilyn, I think the two questions that you raise are incredibly important. When we first started offering the Cultivating Women's Leadership Workshop, what happened was women would contact us, and they would say, well, yes, I want to learn with a group of great, juicy, engaged women, but I'm not sure about this leadership stuff. And what we realized was that we all are really conflicted about leadership, because the definition of leadership that we've inherited is so incredibly flawed and damaging and dangerous.
Yes.
And so, the book that I'm working on right now is really about how women rising into leadership are defining leadership in a whole new way. And and we're defining it based on actually instructions from the inside out rather than from the outside in. So we get our authority from our inner purpose and from our inner knowing. And we have a whole different relationship to power. So rather than exercising power over, we're much more interested in power that comes through us and power with each other. I like often citing the example of when geese migrate. You probably know this, but when geese migrate, they rotate who the lead goose is, because the goose that's in the front of the V gets the greatest wind resistance and therefore takes the most energy to lead. And so they take turns being the lead goose. And in that way, they conserve everyone's energy. And if a goose falls sick and needs to drop out of the V, then two geese fall back and help it heal until it's ready to to fly again. So I think how women are leading, you know, we're really changing the rules of the game and changing what leadership looks like. And a lot of that is through collaboration and shared leadership. Women are often leading from behind and from within rather than from up front. We're leading in a way that respects cyclicity and boundaries and the need for rest and self-care.
I think
we're really redefining the whole leadership terrain. And I would like to believe that we're not only redefining it for ourselves, but for men as well, and that we can serve as examples to teach the men at this point how to lead in a whole nother way. And I think the question you raised, Marilyn, what about men, is a huge one. You know, one of my favorite quotes about that comes from Eve Ensler, who says that if she were made queen of the universe, the first thing she would do is give all the men 5 years off the grieve. And I think that that's really wise, you know. I think that actually the most important thing we can encourage the men and the boys we know in our lives to do is to feel. And if you feel, you have to grieve. Because there is just so much loss and so much violence and so much destruction. And if, you know, there's no way to feel without grieving right now. And thankfully, grieving is the medicine that gives us access to our joy again. So, you know, I believe it's a really important piece of what needs to happen. And I think, you know, the book I'm working on is kind of funny because it's a both-and kind of story in that women are showing the way to leadership, and there are men that are doing it too. And we'll be including some men's voices in this book, and we need to lead in a way that invites and acknowledges the difficulty and the confusion and the pain and the hardship of being in a male body right now.
Exactly.
You know, Nina, this is Jennifer in Minneapolis, and as I'm listening to you, I'm having... You know, I have two paths in my life. One is my career, which I'm totally resonating with you on about this. And then I also am raising two little boys. And I'm struck as you're speaking about the impact and the confusion that I find in raising two little boys of both the male paternal energy and also the female. Speaking to them about it's okay to be scared and it's, you know, how does it feel to be scared and how does it feel, you know, really talking to them about emotions and the power that that brings, but the confusion as a single parent to be negotiating both of those, you know, having the paternal and needing the paternal energy in some way, but also having such the female and having that emerging from me. And like for the first time, I'm feeling like I'm really getting the struggle that I'm in inside of this, and how important it is for the work that I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Jennifer, what you raise is so important because for me, you know, the quest that I think we're all on, and I think this is true for women as well as for men, is to identify and reclaim and rebuild relationship with a healthy masculine and a healthy feminine within each of us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm sure you're trying to do with your boys, you know.
Yeah,
and I think that's the best gift you can give them.
Yeah, I find I struggle with what is the healthy male, because I feel like I don't know.
Yeah, no, we're all learning it. There's a new book out by Matthew Fox about, I don't even remember what it's called.
I think it's The Divine Masculine.
The Divine Masculine, yes.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. I mean, I think that there are examples, and wherever you find healthy men in your life, Jennifer, that might be moved to befriend your kids, I would encourage you to do that, you know. I mean, I have a gay colleague who I work with, and one of his favorite things is to become an ally and a friend to young boys because he doesn't have his own kids, and he loves it, and he's a beautiful embodiment of a healthy masculine.
The Matthew Fox book is actually called The Hidden Spirituality of Men.
Thank you.
Hi, Nina.
Yes.
Hi, this is Linda Higdon. I have not had the pleasure of ever meeting you. Marilyn, you're on the phone, right?
I am, dear.
Hi. Can I know we're winding up the call, but I just would like to throw out one observation and just hear your comments on this. My experience, I'm going to go back to two questions ago about women's leadership and the formation of the geese and how we're taking turns when the leader gets tired. My experience with working with women has been anything other than that geese formation.
Right.
And what I I don't have an answer for this. I'm just, and Marilyn knows that I have been asking the deeper questions, but what I believe and I have experienced, and, you know, I have to take ownership for, is that when women are coming together in circle for spiritual healing, that is one thing. But when women are coming together to work together to accomplish a common goal, there is so much projecting going on. I have to tell you that it's kind of making my head spin. Meaning, you know, it's taken lots of women many years to get where they've gotten, and they're not about ready to let go of that control. Or how do we say to a woman, I disagree with you, and be respectful where we're not hurting her feelings? I mean, there are just, again, you know, we're saying some broad things here, and I know you can't answer it all, but I have to tell you, I would love to talk with you about this more, because I've worked with many, many, many women's initiatives, I would say hundreds, and that what I see is there's hope, excitement, inspiration, courtship, during the courtship period. Then when it comes to getting things done and getting organized, you can move out the mission, things fall apart. And it's because women are still so hurting inside that another woman can appear as a threat or unkind, or maybe the woman is projecting years of whatever. So I would love to hear your thoughts on this.
Well, I mean, I totally resonate and know the truth of what you're saying, so thank you for saying it. And, you know, for me, one of the kind of important ahas has been to realize that one of the elements of our human capacity that's been associated with the feminine, and therefore it's been undervalued and undercared for and undernurtured, is our interiority. And I believe that all of our behavior and the way that we show up in the world is actually informed by our inner landscape. And that we, you know, as you say, many, many, many of us, in fact, probably most of us, have internalized voices of internalized depression within us.
Yeah.
And the key is to becoming, I mean, as far as I can tell, anyway, on my own trajectory, my best learning is to become as conscious as I know how about those voices, and ritually and continually sort of monitor myself to help shed them and transform them, so that I can reclaim a healthy relationship to the kind of challenge energy that can lovingly and consciously and skillfully call another woman out and say, you know what, you just did shut down the room instead of opening up possibility. Is that what you really want?
Yeah.
And I can't pretend that I have this. I'm learning it just like all of us, you know, and it's really hard. But but I'm doing the best I know how.
But, Nina, I will say, that one comment that you're making, I hope in the writings that you're doing that you would be as specific as possible so that we can all learn that a new language together, so that we're just not repeating the same. You know, we thought, boy, it'll be great when we have a voice, and then we have a voice and we realize other women's voices are now what we have to struggle with. So as specific as you can be in your writings, I know I would appreciate that.
Amen. Well, thank you for that. And I also just want to say that I feel like I'm an instrument and a channel in a way, and I'm learning from you and the women I encounter and my own experience as fast as I know how, but I don't pretend to have all the answers remotely, you know?
Well, it's not, you know, what you're doing here, for example, you gave me some new language today about things I've been talking about, but it is, I think, the new language that Linda's talking about that you also have a real gift, and that is so deeply appreciated. I mean, I really appreciate it. Like, the idea of, what did you say, I've lost my place here, on the patterns that you talked about.
Solving the pattern.
solve for the pattern is so rich, because I've been talking about the infrastructure or going to the roots of the issue, but the solving for the pattern is just like perfect. Perfect language.
Oh,
so
great.
I'm very grateful.
So
I
want to really just acknowledge everybody. We could, Nina and I talked yesterday and said, Nina said, I can already tell that an hour is going to feel way too short. So here we are at the end of the hour that's clearly way too short. But I also really want to honor that people have other commitments to go to and things to do. And just deeply, deeply thank you, Nina. I also, there is a beautiful way that you weave together language and ideas, and I'm really grateful that you talked about race and white supremacy. I think it's went from politically correct to politically taboo to post blah blah blah, and it's such an unbelievably important thread of the conversation, and a dangerous one. So I really want to honor that place of fear to speak words like that when I think white women, as a white woman, we need to hear it over and over again and really confront ourselves, whether we like it or not. So I want to just punctuate that and thank you for the rigor and the courage to speak that. And just thank you for your life's work and your deep listening to yourself so that you can channel what it is you're channeling, and for the wisdom that's pouring through you. And it was a really rich, beautiful call, and I know I and everybody probably have 10 more questions, but we'll save it for another venue and another moment in time.
And don't forget, Google Nina and look at her, the work she does, and the program she's offering on women's leadership. They excel.
Yes, and go to thebioneers.org and find a Cultivating Women's Leadership.
Yeah.
And thank you all. I mean, this was really rich for me, and it's hard to stop because it feels like such a fertile, beautiful web we have. But I really look forward to further interaction and to seeing how we can weave together, because we need each other and the earth needs us. And what a great opportunity we have to step into this.
And we'll send the recording, and the recording will be up on our site, and Nina will get the recording so we can pass this on to other women and friends, and we'll send you all the link to the article and resend the link to the Bioneers Cultivating Women's Leadership so we can all just keep reminding ourselves how to get to one another.
Keep it going.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, everybody, for participating.
Okay, blessings.
And
thank
Nina,
you so
praise
much.
To you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye,
so powerful.
Thanks,
thank
all.
You.
What a joy.
Have a wonderful day, everyone.